taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me. If you happen to be one of the many people I met last week in Tampa, Florida, well, I'm glad you could join me here too. I had a great time back there, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity of meeting more everyday Americans across this country as we're teaching about our rights, knowing our rights, how do we defend our rights, how do we assert our rights, how do we live as free citizens in a country that seems bent on crushing every opportunity of liberty that they can. Now, you may have heard that after the ill-named Build Back Better bill, Congress has been working on the Invest in America Act. Okay, face it, these titles are made up to make you feel better. Washington, D.C. can't invest in anything. They can't. Any money they spend, they've taken from somebody else. So they're not investing, they're embezzling. But let's get beyond that. Let's take a look at some of the really not nice stuff that is in the Invest in America Act that has already been pushed through the House. That the only thing that stands between you and the government taking more of your money to spend on things they're not legally authorized to, well, is the Senate. So let's take a look here. Now, there's been a lot of talk lately about cryptocurrencies. And for good reason, right? People are tired of the Fed and the federal government manipulating the value of the dollar. So, you know, they've worked on ways of how do we create an open and transparent system where the value of the currency isn't manipulated by government. You know, it's the whole idea of, well, we'll just buy more, we'll inflate it, all this stuff. So there's been a lot of talk about cryptocurrency. Now, understand, I understand a fair amount of how cryptocurrencies work, and there's a lot of information out there that, well, let's just say I don't think is quite as accurate as some might lead you to believe. Cryptocurrencies are, by definition, fiat currencies because they're not based in anything. It's an algorithm. And while the blockchain is an interesting bookkeeping system, it doesn't make the cryptocurrency itself any different. All it means is that the records are held in public rather than in private. So while I see some possibilities for cryptocurrency, I personally have not invested much in them or consider them a viable currency as of yet. Now, who knows what the future holds? But of course, governments don't want anybody making money without them getting their fingers in the pie. So one of the things in the Invest in America Act is a provision to tax cryptocurrency. Now, apparently this is in the Senate version of the bill. And at least it hasn't been amended so far, but it would require that cryptocurrency brokers report their transactions to the IRS. So much for, again, being able to do business without the government snooping in everything that you do. Now, the other one, this has been going around for a while, is they want a national motor vehicle per mile user fee. They want to tax you for the miles you drive. Now, there's a couple things that I believe are driving this. One is sheer greed. Let's just face it. Washington, D.C. are some of the greediest people in our country. They want your money. They think it's their money. They want it. But think about it. Aren't there problems with a program? See, they want to set up a pilot to track vehicle miles traveled so that they can tax drivers based on their average vehicle mileage. How many miles your annual vehicle mileage? How many miles did you drive? Pay us a tax. All right, now, again, there are several problems. One, this is a direct tax. It's a direct tax on the people. It is not apportioned by, it is not apportioned to the states to collect for the federal government. Therefore, and oh, by the way, it is not based on income. So therefore, it is unconstitutional. Bad enough. Problem number two, it's also a violation of the Fourth Amendment because basically it's the government saying, we have the right to know how much you drive. Well, if they're going to know how much you drive, how are they going to find that out unless they know where you drive? And to find out where you drive, they must search your records in some form or another to track where you drive. That is an unreasonable search, ladies and gentlemen. There is no probable cause that they have to do this because the tax itself is illegal. Now, has that stopped the government from implementing illegal taxes? Absolutely not. They do it all the time. But once again, here we have another illegal tax because the government says, listen, we're trying to get people away from fossil fuels, so we don't have a gas tax. What are we going to do? Well, one of the things we can do is a vehicle mileage tax. I've already talked with my state representative about this. I think it's a horrendous way of doing things. But at least the state has a bit more legitimate constitutional authority. The federal government does not. And oh, if you think the courts are going to shoot this down, don't hold your breath. But speaking about the problems with the mileage tax, the bill, this $1.2 trillion bill, includes a $118 billion bailout of the Highway Trust Fund. You see, the federal government collects excises, a form of tax, on gas sales. Okay. Now, they use that to fund this Highway Trust Fund. Now, the Highway Trust Fund is, as I understand it, designed to maintain highways, bridges, stuff like that. There's just one problem. Unless it's a post road, the federal government has no legal authority to spend money on highways or other infrastructure. Yeah, you see, the federal government's only legally allowed to spend money on things it's authorized in the Constitution. And highways in general, roads in general, bridges in general, are not authorized, are not something under the purview of the federal government, with the exception of post roads. Now, we don't truly have post roads, right? The roads have become rather ubiquitous. It's not like, you know, the 18th century where if you wanted to get mail from one town to another, you had to have some way of connecting them. You'd build a road, and they'd call it a post road because it was there primarily for the post office. We don't have those. Although I suppose some argument could be made with the interstate system as dealing with the transportation of mail. That'd be the closest thing I could think of as a post road, or the roads that go directly to and from post offices. So they're bailing out a trust fund, which has been misused and misspent on things that the federal government's not authorized to spend money on. And of course, they waste your money and then they take more money from you to fix the stuff that they ruined. How about this? The bill includes a mandate for all vehicle manufacturers to install drunk and impaired driving prevention technology. I guess they want to put breathalyzers in all the cars. Now, again, this is a mandate. This is unconstitutional. This is, you know, a private companies, manufacturers, if they're owned by private, if they're private corporations, meaning they are not funded by government, they are funded, they are owned by people who own stocks, people and organizations that own stocks. Federal government has no authority to deprive the vehicle manufacturers of control of their businesses. If drunk and impaired driving technology is something these companies wish to install, if they think there's a market for it, well, they probably would have already. Now, these are used for people who have been convicted of drunk driving. But that is followed, hopefully, due process, meaning the right to control your vehicle has been abridged based on due process. Your control of a vehicle has been given away. You have lost it for a as punishment of a crime you've committed, specifically drunk driving. But look at what else this does. This bill assumes that everybody is driving drunk unless proved otherwise. You're treated as guilty until proven innocent. Imagine buying a car, and you're assumed to be a drunk driver until you can prove to the car that you're not a drunk driver. Do we deal with that anywhere else? Would we accept that anywhere else? And what happens if there's a technical malfunction in that drunk or impaired driving prevention technology? Imagine you're out on some freeway, some giant six-lane freeway going along at the speed limit, and all of a sudden your drunk or impaired driving prevention technology decides you're intoxicated. It does, depending on how it's detecting whether you're drunk or impaired, it suddenly decides, you know what, I don't think you're safe to drive anymore. And it just kills your engine right there in the middle of the highway. Imagine the lawsuits that have come from that. But this is the Constitution study. So I come back to the point, this is not Constitution. This mandate is void. No, those are not my words. Those are the words of the Supreme Court, specifically Chief Justice Marshall. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principle, supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that all courts as well as other departments are bound by that instrument. Well, here we have a piece of legislature, an act of Congress, a law, if it is passed and signed, that is repugnant to the Constitution. But you see, even though it's void, I bet you all the vehicle manufacturers will comply with it, partially because of ignorance, partially out of fear, partially out of just saying it's not worth the time and effort to fight the federal government, because we've abandoned this idea of the rule of law. We now have the rule of a few. Well, that's called an oligarchy. Which brings me to the last thing I want to mention from the ill-named Invest in America Act, more like the Infringe and Steal from America Act. See, according to those there in the bill, there's a provision to allow certain cabinet secretaries the authority to waive government cost-sharing rules with private sector. Meaning, see, the federal government realizes that, we really can't do this, so we're going to share the cost with the private sector. No, it says we're going to fully fund infrastructure projects with taxpayer dollars. The infrastructure, which is not the authority under the delegated to the Constitution, delegated to the United States. We did not delegate to the United States the power to regulate, implement, or control infrastructure. The only infrastructure they're allowed to control are federal lands, Washington, D.C., courthouses, federal buildings, and post roads. But you see, since so few people know or understand the Constitution anymore, they sit back and let the federal government once again take over our lives, claim the authority to say, you know what, we're just going to spend money on infrastructure wherever we want. We're going to decide that we're going to take money for a highway trust fund, that we're going to tax you. Forget the Constitution. Constitution doesn't matter anymore. It's whatever we can get through Congress. Because we, the people, allow this to happen. See, I don't blame Congress for this. We've trained Congress. They can get away with just about everything. As James Garfield said, I blame us, we the people. In 1876, Garfield said, "Now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. We are responsible for these measures. We are responsible for this abomination of legislation. We are responsible for the federal government getting involved in every aspect of our lives because we tolerate it." As James Garfield said, if that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it's because the people demand these high qualities for those who represent them in the national legislature. Ladies and gentlemen, we are tolerating ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. And this bill, the Invest in America Act, and its predecessor, the Build Back Better bill, are proof positive that we tolerate ignorance, recklessness, corruption. Not only do we tolerate, many in this country beg for it. Many in this country are waiting, begging, please come fix our roads for us because we're just too stupid, too lazy, or are we just willing to accept the bribe? As Alexis de Tocqueville said, this republic will survive until Congress realizes it can bribe the people with their own money. This, ladies and gentlemen, is that bribe. We'll take care of, you know, we'll take care of cryptocurrency for you. We'll take care of the roads for you. We'll make sure that you're not, you know, driving drunk because you're too stupid to figure that out for yourself. All of this is to bribe the American people. And let's face it, a look at history shows we are more than willing to accept that bribe. We are just as culpable, if not more culpable, because we keep hiring these crooks to represent us. And then we told our states, hey, we want you to hire this guy, Joe Biden, to be our chief executive. Now, I know a lot of people out there don't believe he won the election. I have yet to see sufficient evidence to say that a majority of the states did not vote for President Biden. I know there are a lot of states that have problems, and maybe there's more evidence that I haven't found yet. But let's face it, when we had the opportunity to question those state elections, most of the American people did nothing. So now we have President Joe Biden. And if you look at some of the people he has placed in his cabinet, we find some very interesting things. Like this new one, person nominated for to regulate the banking system, right? What is her name? Saul Omarova, sorry. I didn't mean to mispronounce your name. I'm trying to do this, but she said in a statement earlier this year that she wants to starve companies of money to invest in the oil and gas industry to fight climate change. This lady basically thinks, listen, you're too stupid to support climate change, so you're still buying that fossil fuel. How stupid are you? We are going to starve them of money. See, this is very interesting because it reminds me very much of another attempt by the government under a previous administration to starve an unpopular industry of access to banking and funds. What was that again? Oh, yeah, that was under the Obama administration. And their Operation Choke Point, which was, again, the federal government intimidating banks to drop gun manufacturers and gun retailers as customers. This is the same scenario. Again, we didn't learn from the last time. We're going to do it again. Every one of you that said, well, listen, I don't own a gun. I don't buy guns, so I don't care. Here they are doing it to you again, only now it's not your firearms. It's how you heat your house. It's the electricity they use for cooking and cleaning and little things like, oh, I don't know. Heating your house, turning on lights. Maybe you use it for certain appliances. Why is it a bank person, someone in the that's regulating the banking system, believes that it is their job to implement climate change? Because again, we the people have hired crooks in these offices, people who actively act contrary to their oath to support the Constitution, and we keep hiring them. Now listen, whether you think climate change is a huge problem or not, whether or not you think the oil and gas industry should grow or shrink, it is not the role of the banking system to intimidate other industries. That's the role of a totalitarian system. That's what you have in a banana republic. We're supposed to be a constitutional republic. And remember, Joe Biden can't simply appoint this person. It goes through the Senate, which means your representatives of the states, the people you have hired to represent your states, get a say on whether or not this person can further our march towards Marxism, socialism, communism, and government control of absolutely every aspect of your life. If the banking sector can say, we don't think you should be buying gas anymore, what can't they do? Think of what industry can exist without a banking system. What if the banking system decides, you know what? People spend too much money on Xboxes. So we're gonna use a banking system to help throttle the video game console system. What if they decide to regulate the banking system for, groceries? Imagine bank regulators setting up rules to control how much junk food you can buy in proportion to how much leafy green vegetables you buy. See, banking is one of those things that can be used to manipulate the entire system. And we are watching government assume the power to regulate every aspect of our lives, and the vast majority of Americans are doing nothing, and a few of them are saying, this is wrong, but what are you doing about it? How many of you have contacted your senator and said, let's not install an avowed Marxist, socialist, communist to take over to regulate our banking system and use it to manipulate the lives of every American? How about we do that? How about we demand that they vote no if they ever want to keep their job again? How about we start putting up some of those ultimatums? Yes, ultimatums, ladies and gentlemen. You want this job, you better start acting according to your oath of office. If this person wants to regulate the banking system, which that is questionable, interstate banking possibly, right? Because you got interstate commerce. But when they want to use the banking system to starve unpopular companies in unpopular industries, right? That is totalitarianism. When are we going to say, you stop voting to turn us into the Soviet Union or you lose your job, period, end of story. I don't care how many goodies you promised me. Throw all the bribes you want in this Investment Act and the Build Back Better Act. If you're trying to make us a communist country, you lose your job. It's not negotiable. I told the story about last week when one person stood up and he told a brief version of what he has been through, how he had been arrested for just trying to live his life. He had his business shut down. He and his wife have been harassed by government. So he decided to run for Congress. See, he decided to do something. The vast majority of people don't do anything. Now, should most of you be running for Congress? No, I don't think running for Congress is something most of us are cut out for. He's going to be dragged through the mud. His family's going to be dragged through the mud. He's going to be lied about, slandered, defamed. He's prepared for that. More power to him. After the discussion I had with him, I hope he stands for what he's been talking about. I do. But ladies and gentlemen, when are we going to start voting on representatives, not based on the bribes they send home, but by their fidelity to the Constitution? When has that become our first question? Because every senator that votes for this communist works for you. They are your fault. I don't care you didn't vote for them. What did you do to get other people to not vote for them? When was the last time you talked to people as if that senator was your employee? When was the last time you held one of those employees accountable for lying to you? The vast majority of cases, the answer is never. Never. It's our own ignorance and our own apathy that have led this country from the freest country in the world to number 15 in the list of free countries. Now, we still have a great country. Don't get me wrong. America is still better than anywhere else as far as I'm concerned. But let's face it. Our rights are being taken away layer by layer, right by right, right under our noses because we are too lazy or too greedy to stand up against it. This is not an outlier. This is not. This Saleh Omarova is not unique. She has become the norm. So when are we going to do something about it? Or are you going to look your children in the eye and tell them, you know what, America used to be free. Yeah, you could start a business and you could make money and you can actually, if you worked hard, you stood a chance of actually making something and giving a better life and creating a better life for your children. But you see, we can't do that anymore because I was afraid to stand up. I couldn't be bothered to hold my representatives accountable. I couldn't be bothered to fire a senator because, hey, they sent me money. So you may not tell that story, but then you'll be lying to your kids. If you do nothing, you support the status quo. If the status quo is evil and corrupt, you are supporting evil and corruption. If you want Congress to be intelligent, brave, and pure, the House and the Senate, you must demand that of your representatives. It is not a passive action. It is an active action. You must demand it. You must hold them accountable. Because America, the America that we grew up in, the America that we thought of, the America that helped save the world, not once, but twice, the America that people look to for safety and salvation, the America people flock to for freedom, is being ground into dust while the vast majority of its citizens sit back and wonder what new goody is going to be used to bribe them today. Now, I have to head off to a break. Before I do that, a couple things. One is I'm considering creating a question and answer episode. If you want an episode that's me answering your questions, well, here's what you do. Go to constitutionstudy.com. Click in the menu bar. Click the ask a question. Ask your simple question. There's a checkbox that says, I would like this answered on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Check that box. I will get the question. I will put them together. When I got enough of them, I will do and ask a Q&A session right here on the radio. So if that's what you'd like, just head there and just head to constitutionstudy.com and ask a question. Also, please head over to healthycell.com/outloud. Now, vitamins have been around forever, but they really haven't changed since the 1930s. And if you're like me, sometimes you get to the end of the day and, well, you have a hard time. You get the brain fog, right? You have a harder time focusing on what you're working on. You're more easily distracted. Well, Healthy Cell has what they call their focus and recall. It boosts your short-term focus, helps with your long-term memory and your long-term brain power. And it's a simple gel pack. Easily take with you, travel with you, put it in a drink, put it in food, take it directly. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud or use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Again, that's healthycell.com and use the promo code OUTLOUD at checkout.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is the McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Cell product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutLoud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and I have a question for you. Do you believe we live in a communist country? Do you believe we live in a socialist country? Well, you may not, but President Biden does. You see, President Biden has directed his National Economic Council to focus on reducing energy costs. See, why? Well, you see, Biden's Department of Labor reported that inflation has hit a 3-decade high. So Biden says, hey, I know, I'm king of this country. I can reduce energy costs. All I got to do is tell my National Economic Council to do it, and it'll magically happen. Now, here's the interesting part. Well, from my standpoint, how many people have been begging President Biden to do something about inflation? How many people have been begging the federal government to do something about high energy costs? Now, to me, that is a disturbing trend, right? Because, well, federal government's not supposed to have the power to impact inflation. It's not supposed to have the power to impact energy cost. It's not. In fact, if you look at it, let's start with energy costs. Why has energy costs, why is the price of gasoline risen so high? Why is the price of energy at all levels skyrocketing, or at least increasing at a rapid rate? Could it possibly have something to do with Joe Biden shutting down drilling leases, shutting down pipelines? In other words, restricting energy, or at least fossil fuels, which is still the vast majority of the American, I think, was it, renewable energies make up, what, 4%, 6% of our energy production? So we'll just restrict everything else. Now, remember, before I went to break, I pointed out that Biden's nominee to regulate the banking system wants to starve companies of investment in the oil and gas industry. So in other words, President Biden not only has taken actions as president in just a few months that has helped spike the price of energy, but he wants to have a banking regulator that will make it worse. Because let's face it, if you can't invest in oil and gas companies, where are they going to get the money to drill for new sources of oil and gas. And then what happens to the price of oil and gas when the production of oil and gas gets restricted further? Does anybody else find it hypocritical that the president that's done the most, that at least in my that I can remember, to raise the cost of energy is now telling his economic council to focus on reducing the cost of energy? And does anybody really believe that President Biden is going to reduce the cost of energy? First of all, he can't reduce it. All he could really do is remove the pressure that's causing it to go up. Let these companies go back to drilling. Let these people, these companies build these pipelines. Let's let energy flow again. Remember, at the end of the Trump administration, America was a net exporter of fuel, exporter of energy. We produced more than we consumed, and we could sell it on the open market. Now, in just a couple months after the Biden administration took over, America is once again a net consumer of energy. So that naturally, because energy is less available in this country, the price goes up. This, by the way, is exactly what President Biden wants. Why do I say that? Because he's installed a banker, someone to oversee the banking regulations, that wants to choke off funds to oil and gas, which is the vast majority of our energy sources. So if anybody really believes that President Biden's can do anything to restrict the upward pressure he has already placed on energy, oil, gas, what are you smoking? I mean, it really takes someone obtuse to not see that the very man that's done everything he can to raise the cost of energy is suddenly going to go, oh, my bad, we're going to reduce the cost of energy. First of all, he can't directly reduce it. But do you really think that the man has put pressure to restrict our primary source of energy is going to suddenly ease back on that? Based on what? It doesn't hurt him. He's got millions. He can afford these high energy. Doesn't hurt him. And if he were to open up leases for drilling, if he were to re-enable pipelines, in other words, if he were to stop getting in the way of the oil and gas and energy industries, which would actually allow the prices to come down, the radical left-wing climate nuts, the climate Nazis, would be all over him. And he'd have to fight that fight. He doesn't want to fight that fight. This is pandering. That's all this is. Be a good little peon. Pat you on the head. Be a good little peon. That's okay. I know things are hard. I will tell my people to fix it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Lying through his teeth. Now, inflation isn't just the energy. It's a whole supply chain. Now, you don't have to have a PhD in economics to recognize that if you prevent the economy from building stuff, there won't be stuff to build. Now, I've been in, you know, I spent 30 years. Granted, I was in IT, but I spent 25 of those years selling stuff. I was a systems engineer. I helped people sell mostly computer systems. And every so often, there'd be a problem in the supply chain of one of the components. Maybe it's a hard drive, maybe it's a processor, maybe it's memory, whatever. And as soon as that happened, guess what? You had a harder time selling stuff. People who really need it would pay more money. The price of stuff went up. The price of those components went up. So when Biden admits that the supply chain issues that we are currently seeing, the cargo ships that are parked outside the ports because they can't get unloaded, the inability to transport, the empty cargo containers because they don't have people to move them around, the lack of workers to distribute these resources. And of course, you've also got the stimulus checks that his administration gave out. Now, you can't simply blame Biden for this. First of all, Biden, well, he didn't appropriate the money. Congress appropriated the money. In fact, your representatives in the House of Representatives initiated the appropriation of that money. And we can't simply blame this Congress because the previous Congress did it as well. The Trump administration sent out checks. So here we have supply chain issues. We have the inability to get material that people can buy. Look at your store shelves. You have stimulus checks, which disincentivize people from working, which would have helped produce some of the things that are causing the supply chain issues. So Biden admitted, sort of, that's partly to blame for the inflation. Gee, Joe, you mean if there's less stuff and there's more money chasing less stuff, we end up with inflation? Yeah, that's economics 101. He said in some press event that, Americans have more money because his administration gave them money. Yeah, okay. And your solution to this inflation problem is to give people even more money? He blamed the supply chain as also part of it. But granted, you didn't start it. It was actually somewhat under the Trump administration, somewhat the states involved in the Trump administration that said, hey, we're going to shut down the economy. We're not going to allow people to make stuff. In other words, we're not going to allow people to put stuff into the supply chain. So now that we've taken everything out of the supply chain we can, and we're actually paying people to not work. Now, we're not doing it as much as before, but again, what's the solution? Well, we'll just give people more money. And if giving people money helped contribute to inflation, how does giving them more money fix inflation? And if paying people to making it easier for them not to work helped create the supply chain issue, how does giving them even more ways to survive without working fix the inflation caused by the supply chain issue? See, this isn't even a shell game. This is economic Russian roulette with a revolver. This is the equivalent of saying, hey, I just bashed my thumb with a hammer. I know how to fix it. I'll bash my other thumb. No, I'll bash that thumb again with a hammer. And I'll keep bashing it until it doesn't hurt anymore. We are borrowing trillions and trillions of dollars to pump into an economy that already has an excess of money in it. That's what inflation is. When too much money chases too few goods, the price of those goods go up. This isn't going to make inflation better. This is going to make inflation worse. We're going to go back to the days of 10, 12, 15% inflation at the rate we're going. Now, I don't know about you. I'm old enough to remember when inflation was double digits. Remember stagflation? Anybody remember Jimmy Carter telling us that you can't afford oil to heat your home, so just put on a sweater? Anyone else remember mortgages, 10, 12%? Remember trying to buy a car? A car loan was 18, 20%? We're heading that way, and we're doing, and our administration, this administration, the government, the people's representatives are doing everything they can to make things worse. But don't worry. President Biden says, I'll fix it because I now know it was a stimulus check, so I'll give you more. It made the supply chain problem worse, so I'll do some more. See, it makes me wonder, is it really the fact that there are those in government that just want everybody dependent on government? Forget the supply chain. Forget everything. Government will give you a check. Government will provide everything you need. If we just make you poor enough and miserable enough, you'll eventually look to government to take care of every part of your life. You know, what's interesting is I've been reading a book on the history of Marxism. And the most shocking thing I've read so far is that the whole plan of Marxism was to make everybody miserable. Wait, Paul, I thought Marxism and socialism was all supposed to be this utopia. Yeah, they figure if they make everybody miserable, there'll be a revolution, and somehow that will bring in the perfect utopia. makes me wonder, are these people really pushing for a war? Are they looking to make the American people so miserable that they're willing to fight? Again, not for their freedom, but to fight to give government complete and absolute control over their lives. Now, you may think I'm nuts. You may think I'm crazy. You may think I'm a conspiracy theorist. But when Press Secretary Jen Psaki from the Oval Office, the press briefing room, states, look, our view is that the rise in gas prices over the long term makes an even stronger case for doubling down on our investment and our focus on clean energy options so we are not relying on the fluctuations in OPEC and their willingness to put more supply and meet the demand in the market. See, she thinks that these rising gas prices are good because it's going to push people towards alternative energy. See, they're more than willing to make you miserable with high gas prices, high oil prices, high electricity prices, if it gets you to go to this alternative energy. But here's the part she doesn't say. See, remember, gas prices are up in large part because we're not producing as much oil here in this country. She says we shouldn't be relying on the fluctuations and on OPEC and whether or not they'll put more supply in, but we are dependent on OPEC because her boss, the President of the United States, said, I have the power to shut down leases so that the oil companies can't drill. You see, we're dependent on OPEC to supply because the president has said, we don't want to do it here. Not in my backyard. And then suddenly they say, well, you see, this is a good thing. This is why we need to go to alternative energy. As if somehow magically alternative energy isn't going to have the similar problems that we have here. But Paul, you're not sucking oil out of the ground. How's alternative energy going to have such an impact? Well, if you're dependent on solar, what happens if we have, a month with a lot of cloud cover and the solar farms aren't producing as much electricity? Won't the price go up? Won't that be a fluctuation? Or what if we're dependent on wind farms and there's not as much wind this month? That means there's not enough energy, not as much energy. Won't the price go up? Could it possibly be that the reason President Biden shut down the drilling leases, shut down the pipelines, choked off America's ability to produce oil and gas was to help push us towards a more expensive solution, that of alternative energy? Could it possibly be? Could it really be anything but? I can't read President Biden's mind. I don't think I'd want to if I could. But again, what we see is government saying, we know what's best for you. No. You don't want that oil. You don't want that natural gas. No. We're going to make that more expensive because you're too stupid to not buy it yourself. We will make it harder for you to buy so that you will embrace what we want. The natural, the quote-unquote alternative energy sources that we think is best for you. Has anyone else figured out that all these socialists, Marxists, communists think of you as children? Unable to decide for yourself, unable to make decisions for yourself, just not able to make the right decision. So they have to do it for you. And of course, you know, how are they going to make sure that they influence you to make the right decision? Well, in one of the proposed multi-trillion dollar social spending bills is a provision called the Local Journalism Sustainability Act. See, what this is going to do is it's the federal government giving money to media organizations. That's right. We're going to have state-funded media. That's what they want. Now, why would they want state-funded media? Have you ever heard the saying, he who pays the piper calls the tune? Do you think the media is going to provide difficult questions, difficult information about things like, oh, the shutting down of the pipelines or the negative impacts of stimulus checks, if they become just as dependent on the federal government as we all have? See, if you're not willing to vote for someone because you might lose a stimulus check, a welfare check, a Social Security check, a Medicare check, if you're not willing to vote against something criminal because you're afraid you're going to lose a check, what do you think is going to happen when your journalists, when the newspapers, now let's face it, the media is, most of the media is pretty much in the tank for the Democratic Party. I mean, even calling them media is a bit of a misnomer. They're the communications arm of the DNC. The vast majority of media, at least the stuff that I see. Now, you probably have local papers, local stations that don't. They're not dependent on that. They're becoming fewer and farther between because they've been bought up by these large conglomerates, but they're still out there. But what happens when they're competing with media that's being subsidized by the federal government? How are the independent media organizations supposed to survive when their competition is getting federal dollars? It's going to drive more of them to capitulate, to get federal dollars as well. Now, they may be a tax credit or they may be a direct payment, but in any case, you're talking about federal money subsidizing media. And once the federal government subsidizes media, do you really think they won't have any influence on media coverage? How can you be informed? How can you give your informed consent if the government is telling you only what they want you to hear? We've already seen government use its bribes to influence businesses. Put in a vaccine mandate or we'll fine you. Shut down, allow transgender bathrooms. Just open up the bathrooms, boys and girls, or we'll cut off your funding. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a straight up bribe. And this is being promoted by your employees in Congress. What are you going to do about it? See, I expect politicians, especially nowadays, to be crooks. They're liars, they're cheats, they're crooks. I assume every politician is a crook until proven otherwise, and so far, not many of them have proved to be otherwise. But what happens when the news media that is supposed to be reporting on them, that is supposed to be helping to hold them accountable, well, what happens when they are bought and paid for by the federal government? See, then we'll end up with other things like, anybody remember that, was it the National School Board Association letter asking the DOJ to treat parents as domestic terrorists? And now emails have been released, internal emails that reveal that the NSBA coordinated with the White House and the Department of Justice before sending this letter. So if the White House, if this administration used this NSBA, or at least conspired with this NSBA, to falsely accuse parents of being domestic terrorists in order to shut them up, what happens when we have few, if any, independent journalists willing to hold them accountable? How do we find out about these emails when the people who are supposed to be investigating are bought and paid for by the administration? What? Now, before I go, I want to throw one other in here because I've been focusing a lot on the federal government. But you know what? Your states act this way as well. I found this in the Epoch Times. There's a bipartisan group of governors in 9 states that sent a letter to Congress, to U.S. lawmakers, urging them to pass subsidies for semiconductor factories that would provide chips for cars. Now understand, part of the reason we have a chip shortage is because during the scamdemic, we shut down trade internationally. We get most of our chips from China and Taiwan. That's a decision made because it's cheaper to do it in China and Taiwan because the governments have made it so expensive to manufacture high-tech items in the U.S. We have driven all of it offshore. Now we got bit in the backside because we shut down all that trade. So now what do? We have governors in 9 states, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Kansas, and California, saying federal government bribe manufacturers to start making these chips in the U.S. You drove them out, now pay them to come back. See, all of these states, and notice, not all of them would you call reliably democratically led states. Illinois and California certainly are. Wisconsin, probably. North Carolina, Kentucky, Pennsylvania. Say, federal government, one of our industries is in trouble. It's your job to fix it. And remember, each and every one of those governors swore or affirmed to support the Constitution of the United States. And their idea of supporting the Constitution of the United States is encouraging the federal government to pass legislation that is repugnant to the Constitution of the United States. Do you see why I say we need to be educated? We are hiring, not only are we hiring crooks and criminals, we are hiring people that are selling us into servitude, into slavery. We are hiring them. We are creating the situation for our own demise of liberty. And then we're shocked, shocked when it actually happens. If we think that making chips in the U.S. is so important, how about we start by getting rid of some of this regulation that makes it so onerous for these companies to manufacture in the U.S.? Instead of buying them off, how about we get rid of the impediments? Because that would make sense. And the last thing we could do in this country is something that actually makes sense. You can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts if you go to AmericaOutloud.com, look under shows or schedule, and you'll find out more about the Constitution Study.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.